Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and I'm joined by my other buddy, Adam. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? This is the Peninsular Adam from the southern reaches of the United States.
So this is Florida Adam, and normally we're on with Adam Berkelmans, who we also refer to as Canada Adam. So it's good to have a little bit of a difference between the two, both geographically and personality-wise, I would say. Love them both. And today, we're going to have a special episode. This is what we're going to call a crew chat. It was going to be a longer crew chat, but the rest of the crew got tied up doing other things. So really, it's just us. Us two, we make the crew. Which is fine by me. And we'll get started on what our episode's going to be here in a minute. First, I want to see what everybody's thoughts are about our last episode we had. It was pretty good episode.
Advanced Wild Game Cooking Techniques with Larry White. I ran across Larry White. I was conned into joining Instagram about a year ago, and I ran into him pretty quickly. And he's doing some really nice stuff, so I haven't listened to the podcast yet, but he's definitely caught my eye.
I liked it a lot. It was a good conversation. I would say that I was the episode was more about what I wanted than what pleasing the audience, because I just wanted to chat with Larry about all his really cool recipes, and we both share Coast Guard history, so that's always fun. But I don't know, Adam, what have you been up to lately in the world of hunting? I've seen some pictures from you, wild pigs, snipe, all kinds of stuff. What do you got going on?
Right now, getting ready for turkey season. Snipe's kind of winding down. It's been a really good year as far as the birds go, being able to get out once a week or twice a week, which I didn't have last year. But just really happy to be able to get the dogs out. We've had a bit of a pig problem in the backyard as of late. Yeah, lots of pork in the backyard. So that's been keeping me pretty busy winding down with processing season for deer, trying to get ramped up to do mobile work and the spring cooking, travel, education season is coming up. We got the BHA rendezvous 2 months away.
So yeah, like 70 something days.
Yeah, and then June and July, and then alligator season starts in August, so it's all just rolls right back over. But Just trying to stay busy.
It all goes so quick, right?
It really does. Once you get in that rhythm, seasonal work has its ups and downs and its ebbs and flows. But once you get in that rhythm, it really does go by pretty quickly.
Speaking of seasonal work, why don't you remind sort of everybody what you do for work?
I run a small wild game processing operation and also do mobile slaughter and domestic animals on occasion. Just trying to do good work, make sure that animal does not die twice, as we like to say. You know, you killed it once. That's fair. Don't screw it up. Don't screw it up from there on out. So,
which I think so. Adam also is our lead instructor for our wild pig camps. For the butchering aspect, he helps educate all our folks when they come down to pig camp. But it also really plays into why you know I had him and the broader crew selected for this episode, because. One, I value their perspective. Two, I like hanging out with them. But really, this topic's right in Adam's wheelhouse here. And so it all began a long, long time ago. And there was one man in a cooler full of ice and some water and some meat. No, just kidding. That's kind of how the story started. But for us, what this episode is going to focus on is we're going to kind of discuss the ins and outs of the myth of soaking wild game meat in ice water. And really this all stemmed because back on the last season of The Sporting Chef, we had a segment on there. And on that segment, we ran it was kind of like cooking tips, tricks, how-tos, and then we chose to debunk a myth. And the myth we chose to debunk was the common practice of soaking meat in ice water. Adam, as a butcher, gets a lot of it. I don't know. Do you still take it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he receives meat like that. Receives it more commonly than he probably wants.
We try to educate people on proper handling technique. Sometimes you don't have a choice. But once you have the knowledge, you generally have a better understanding of how things work, why you do it, why you don't do certain things, and it's really not that hard. It's not that hard to not throw it in ice water. I think a lot of reasons people do that have been debunked. I like to tell people, coolers these days, they're really good. Like, you used to have an ice box in your house where you put a block of ice in it and it would keep the whole ice box cold. That's kind of how a cooler works. It doesn't need to be submerged necessarily to get that cooling effect. Now, to get that initial cool off, I think that's why people throw it into that ice water. But you have more time than you think to get that cooled down. And there's a right way to do it. And if you cool it down too quickly and heat can't escape from the inside, then you get a whole other set of problems. There's a lot that goes into it. There's cold shortening, which is a whole other conversation. If you take the meat off the bone during rigor and you chill it too quickly, whole other set of problems. So, but the main thing is, I think, ice water.
So essentially, in this whole process, we made a video, and the video was a side-by-side comparison of what happens when you do that. We took a cut of meat from the loin of, I forget if we used a deer or a wild pig at camp, I forget, and we put it in a dry cooler and put it in the walk-in, and then we took the same exact cut from the other side of the animal, and we put it in ice water and put it in the walk-in. And we let both of them sit in there, I think, for a day or two. And then we pulled them out, and visibly the difference side by side. One was still nice and red and delicious looking, and the other one was like this gray, soggy, squishy mess. And we cut them open on video and showed a side by side of like how the water had penetrated the meat on the one and like changed the texture of the outside of it and all these other things. And, you know, it's just really unappetizing from the beginning. Or from the throughout the process. And so we took that video, sent it to Sporting Chef. That was obviously released as a clip. And then we posted it on social media. And Adam, you probably read the comments. I read the comments. It was pretty spicy across both sides of the fence, I would say. People that have been like doing this process their entire life and swear by it. People that soak meat in other things to include, like, I don't know, Adam, Mountain Dew, or like, I've heard so many different random things people have soaked game meat in. And then you've got other people on the other side of the fence that, one, is just like, it's completely foreign to them. And this may be largely geographic. Like, during deer season, it's cold enough outside, people just hang their deer outside, like, if they live in some northern states. And then others are just like, I used to do it. I learned the repercussions, and like I've since moved on. But you may be wondering, especially if you've never heard of it, why people do this. I've heard from people that the most common one is probably that it gets the blood out of the meat. And I'll save all the, we'll talk about the myths here in a minute, but that's one thing. Adam, what's one thing you've heard as to why people soak ice meat in ice water?
That's the most common reason, is to get the blood out or get the gamey taste out of the meat. Second most common reason, obviously being in Florida, is the need to get it cold quickly.
Yep.
So those are the two major reasons.
We're going to talk in a minute about how to get it cool quickly, some proper techniques, because that's something that came from this conversation on social media as well. As people are like, all right, well, you know, you've made this shorter video, I was thinking it was like 2 to 3 minutes, about this whole process, but you didn't really give us the right way to do it. Like, in your opinion and your thoughts through the research that you've compiled, what is the correct way to cool meat? And we're going to go into that. But first, let's talk a little bit about what soaking meat in water does. And Adam mentioned some things like, especially if you take it off the bone and don't allow it to go through rigor, you get cold shortening. Do you want to explain what that is real quick?
Well, so enzymatic activity, buildup of lactic acid after you exercise a muscle, like when you get cramps, you know. It's the same kind of thing when an animal's going through rigor. Your muscles tighten up, and if they don't have anything, any attachment points on the bone with tendons as they tighten up, if they can't release back to that connection point, they're just going to tighten up and they get cold and they stay that way. So you can see the muscle. When I see cold shortened meat come in, you can look at it and see it, touch it, it's harder, rubbery. I mean, it has a definite look, feel and texture to it, and it's because that meat has been taken off the bone and chilled as it's in rigor and trying to tighten up and doesn't have that time to go through rigor, loosen back up and reform at those connection points into the muscle group that it was before it started to shrivel up like a slug, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that sounds It sounds terrible too, and it affects the texture of the meat, right? As well, because it's not allowing it to come back out and sort of like relax.
Yep, absolutely. Those muscle fibers want to be in very long strands, and when you make a steak tender, you're cutting it against that grain, and if it's not allowed to go through rigor and then like tighten up and then stretch back out, it'll always be in that. That's a good
tight,
shot.
Bound up.
Video, right? It's all it'll always be bound up. It's hard to describe. I'm not a scientist. I don't want to use inaccurate chemical terms and descriptors.
Sure.
There's people out there that do that, but that's
science.
That happens. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's a perfectly good description. And I think so that's one thing that can happen from sort of chunking your meat in ice water and cooling it down too quickly. The other thing that happens is you begin to denature the meat in not a good way. Like people get sort of brining, wet aging, and soaking in ice water kind of mixed up with they all do different things. Brining, you know, has salt in the water, which then through osmosis helps tenderize the meat. Just plain water does not do that because there's no osmosis happening.
That would be fusion instead of osmosis.
Yeah.
So one concentration going to another versus equalization. Yep. Diffusion versus osmosis.
That process you get when you soak it in ice water, that ice water, the water is entering the cells of that meat and it's bursting. Those little pockets of liquid inside there, which is why you see that kind of white pasty outside on the meat whenever you get that. And I'll ask this, Adam, what do you do with that like white outside color of the meat? As a butcher, what do you do with that bit?
That grayish denatured layer, like it's been.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just.
What do you do with it?
It's edible. It usually goes in the grind pile. I mean, if you're making sausage out of it, it goes right in there. So, if you want steaks, if you want a meat case presentation piece, it's not going to be there. But for most cooking purposes, I mean, it's color and it's texture. So
essentially, kind of what I'm getting at is, if you're taking meat and you're throwing it in ice water and you're letting it soak, and say it is, you know, a loin off the deer or like another choice cut, you're going to be losing part of that meat that you would normally enjoy in that cut, and it would either get added to the grind pile or it would get discarded, depending. So wouldn't be getting the full use out of the original cut. You might be able to get some use out of it in the grind, but I don't think up to its full potential, like Adam was saying, like a meat case presentation.
Yeah, it's not going to be one of those things I would put out in front of people and show them and be proud of the way it looks. But is it edible? Absolutely. Would I throw it away? Absolutely not. Unless bacteria... Which I think is
that's exactly what I was just about to lead into.
I
know, is,
yes, I can actually see you checking off the things as it goes. I was like, is he really doing that?
Yes. There is some health concerns, I think, with soaking meat in water, right? And if you think about just overall like hygiene, cleanliness in the kitchen, for the same reason that you don't cut vegetables on a board that you just cut meat on, like bacteria spreads. And one place bacteria spreads is through water. So especially if the water is at a temperature that is either too cool or too warm, which is weird. There's a weird, or not a weird, there's a zone where bacteria thrives at. Adam, you know that off the top of your head? I'm trying to think if I do.
42 to 142, I believe, is what the health inspectors would tell you. Somewhere in there, the safe zone would be considered under 42 degrees or over 142 degrees.
Yeah. And you're probably not going to store your meat at 100 something degrees. But it's really easy for a cooler. Yeah, that's true. But it's real easy for a cooler to go from, I don't know, upper 30s to slip over that safety boundary real easily and then start to create a place for bacteria to really thrive.
Yeah, bacteria and a lot of these coolers, people don't bleach their coolers. You don't know where that ice water came from. You're introducing mm-hmm. bacteria from your knife when you break it down. Every time you open your cooler, there's just so many different sources of unknown bacteria that you're introducing them into an environment where they have exactly what they need to thrive. They have food, water, and air. And
yep.
The more you can eliminate those or provide them the right kind of air, which is movement of air, not stagnant, and the right temperature of environment, then you're going to prevent that bacterial growth.
And we talked to sort of by temperature about temperatures, and really the ideal temperature to store meat at is what, below 38 degrees?
Under 42, but ideally right around 34, 36.
Yeah.
And
that's cooling it almost to freezing, but not quite.
That's cooling it almost to freezing, but not quite. Meat freezes at a lower temperature than water. And again, you have time. You have more time than you think. And you can't cool the outside so quickly that the inside is not able to lose an adequate amount of heat. So you got to think about thickness. Working with larger animals, like we in Florida, our deer are pretty small. We get some pretty big pigs down here. So you got to be conscious of that. I've seen people freeze whole hams where the inside of the meat wasn't allowed to cool in time. So it stayed hot. You get what's called bone sour. So that could be an issue. Just slow, consistent air movement. You have more time than you think. Keep it dry. All good steps to take.
And so in talking about sort of keeping meat dry versus wet, so as a processor, what's the difference in working with the sort of wet meat versus dry meat? What's the difference to you?
It's going to lose its own moisture. That's as it loses water weight, it's going to gain flavor. And if you allow it, it's going to actually increase tenderness. So you're sacrificing weight, but you're gaining texture and flavor in a lot of people's opinion. Some people wouldn't notice. So the dryness, ease of handling, lack of bacteria are two of the main reasons. Dry stuff is easier to deal with than slippery stuff. There's a lot of the reasons. The same reason you want to chill your meat before you cut some steaks. It's a lot easier to handle and accurately cut something cold than it is warm. Well, it's a lot easier to accurately cut and hold something that's dry than it is wet. So there's a lot of advantages, both tactile and hygienic.
Yep. Cold and dry equals like very easy to work with, firm meat, in other words.
Exactly right.
And you mentioned taste too.
Dry is crisp. You can't have that dry texture, so that's how it ultimately tastes. It affects your perception of taste by having that dry, crispy outside against that warm, juicy inside. You know, it's dryness. That's moisture is the enemy of crisp.
Yeah, because you're essentially, so in order to get that nice crisp Maillard reaction when you're searing a steak or searing a piece of meat, even if you're searing a roast to go into a braise, like you can't have a barrier of liquid between your hot pan, your oil, which is also, you know, your fat and your protein source, yeah, because if there's moisture,
salty outside and pat dry.
Yep. Yeah, and you want to get rid of that moisture. Otherwise, you're not going to get a crispy crust as you would. So that also plays into effect of, like, if you're going to have steaks and you are soaking meat in ice water, you're going to have to cut off the outside of it in order to get a good sear. Also, too, similarly to, like, marinating, where you've got something that's denaturing the outside of a piece of meat. So in marinades, you're typically going to be using that for something thin that you're going to be cooking really fast and you need it to be very flavorful. With steaks or bigger pieces that are beyond, you know, a quarter of an inch, like a marinade's just going to coat the outside and probably really only penetrate a little bit into the meat. But it's going to denature the outside of the meat if you leave it in the marinade long enough, just like if you leave the if you leave the cut of meat in water long enough, you're going to end up with this like grainy outside that's kind of mushy and grainy, which is not going to sear. It's just really unappealing. Yeah, and I keep hitting on that, but I'm trying to like stress some points that were brought up. Sorry, what were you saying?
If you've ever soaked a crab trap, throw some meat in a crab trap and see what it looks like 24 hours later. You know, you wouldn't want to eat that. A crab would. That's the same kind of thing with your meat, you know?
Yeah. No, but I think those are like really kind of the big things that I wanted to hit on as to like why. I don't know, Adam, did I miss anything you think, going through that?
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to think of an analogy this whole time with protein, denaturing protein, crispy stuff, and the best thing I can come up with is creme brulee. Okay? It's eggs. Eggs are a protein. They can either be scrambled, denatured. They can be nice creamy custard that's firm. And then you get that crispy outside because it's dry, seared. So meat's a lot... Meat proteins are a lot the same. I mean, they're all proteins, right? Heat, acid, moisture, they all affect what that protein will look like and taste like as the end result. You know, you don't want a creme brulee that feels like scrambled eggs in your mouth. You don't want a loin to have that grainy, mealy texture. I've had a lot of conversations come up last night, or not last night, just recently, about mealy texture. What is that? Like you bite into a tomato and it's mealy, or you have sausage that's mealy. You want that sausage to be a creamy texture, and that's that mixture of protein and fat, like a good creme brulee, that when you bite into it, it's not like hamburger meat in a casing. It has that beautiful, unified texture that is a manipulation of fat and protein into something that's good instead of something that's texturally offending. Like meat soaked in water.
Meat soaked in water. Yes. Friends don't let friends soak their meat in water.
No.
It's going to be my next t-shirt. I guess let's talk about some alternative methods, because I started doing this, and I started actually writing it in an article, and then I used it for another project that I'm working on. But we'll go ahead and cover it here. And really, we're going to talk about like 4 to 5 methods. The first one is probably the most straightforward. And that's going to be hanging your meat outside. So if you live in a place like the Great White North, or, you know, even where I live in the West in Colorado, and during the hunting season, the temperatures drop below, you know, 38 degrees, 40 degrees, and get pretty chilly at night. Maybe not all the way down to freezing. You could hang your meat when it's frozen. Just understand there may be some consequences to that. But you're looking for that safe range of, you know, under 30, but not quite down in the very freezing temps. Under 40, but not down into the low temps. You want to make sure there's good airflow. You want to make sure it's not raining. Raining on hanging meat is not good. I would argue that will probably turn your meat bad pretty quickly, especially if it's at a temperature where it's raining and not snowing or doing other things. So think through that. But that good airflow piece is another one too. You want to get your meat cooled down and get it dried out. And that's going to form the pellicle on the outside, which is going to be good to help protect the meat. And then also to, you know, it'll give you a good indication of when that meat's ready to start processing. So that's probably the most straightforward thing. So let's say, all right, I'm out and about and I've got a cooler and I've got ice, but I don't want to throw it in ice water. What can I do? So this is sort of the first method and probably the most easily done. So you can put your ice in the cooler. You want to open your drain plug in the cooler, and you want to prop your one end of the cooler up so that as the ice melts, the water naturally drains out. It also allows like a little bit of airflow inside the cooler to kind of move around. Not saying it's going to be a lot, but it's something. And then what I typically recommend is creating a thermal barrier between the ice and the meat, not in its entirety, but it allows the meat to not sit on top of the ice, because meat that sits on top of the ice can still get freezer burn. As that cold transfers to the meat, it can do the same thing, maybe in a minor scale of what you would see in your freezer. But also, too, you're not letting the meat sink and slide down into the ice below. Anything to add on that, Adam?
I would say, as far as hanging outside, you can start out with a much higher outside temperature. I mean, you got to think that animal. So it's going to lose heat by, what is that, evaporation? So you have airflow around it. It's a daytime. You kill your animal in the daytime. It's daytime temperature of 70, 80. Animal's body temperature is higher than that. You take the skin off, you cut it into smaller pieces while it's still in the bone, you quarter it. You have a lot longer than you think. As long as you're keeping it, like you said, out of the rain and dry, it's got to cool down and then heat back up before you really have to start worrying about anything, any of the nasties. So take your time versus do it wrong. So just really, best thing I can emphasize is you have longer than you think. They say 4 hours between 42 and 142 is the time that prepared food. So again, just take your time, do it well, don't rush it, stay clean is one of the biggest things in that time frame, because when you're working in a hurry, you tend to cut corners, And that's when your bacteria, that's when your nasties are going to get introduced. You know, not taking that time to just think about it. That's the biggest thing I see is people in a hurry thinking, especially in Florida, you know, thinking they have to get this thing cold like right now or get it gutted like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they rush it and they open the guts because they're in a hurry with a knife. You have a lot longer than you think. You have to remember people have been doing this in this climate in Florida for thousands of years before refrigeration, and they managed to make it work. That's no accident. So once you get it apart, then, like you said, that barrier between the ice, it's like the kid in A Christmas Carol sticking his tongue on the flagpole. That's what you're going to get.
That's a great analogy. I'll say as an alternative to, like, this is what I always recommend to people when they ask, what I recommend, and this is probably my number one method, that if you're going to do a cooler, I take either, usually half gallon, or you can use gallon if you got a big cooler too, like milk jugs, and fill them full of, maybe not all the way full of water, but almost up to the top with water, so you give some room for expansion, and I freeze them before the hunt, then I throw those in the cooler, and then I, after you shoot your animal, you just place it in the cooler. You've already got one. You've got this frozen block of ice that's going to be slower to melt than a bag of ice because it's a big solid mass. It's contained inside a plastic apparatus, so you've got your thermo barrier, but it's going to create a cold environment inside the cooler so you can store your meat in. And it's reusable. You can use it over and over and over again. If you think about it in a very like commercial way, Yeti did it, you know, with their like cold packs for the bottoms of the Yetis, but you can do it with a milk jug.
And you can buy milk jug, bleach in soda a bottle, bucket anywhere, and bleach them and keep them super clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's you don't have to worry about opening the drain plug. You don't have to worry about water. You don't have to worry about the meat soaking inside of it. It's like an overall great method. And then when you're done, like Adam said, bleach them, clean them off, throw them back in your freezer, and just wait till you go out next. I mean, that's like the number one way I recommend if people are going to store their meat in a cooler from the field to their house or field to the butcher or field to wherever, that's the way to do it.
Yep.
Is with the milk jug method. Now let's talk about sort of once you get back or once you get to the processor or if you're out traveling. So I would say, you know, there's a lot of folks that, make their own walk-ins. I mean, it's not super terribly hard. It's just all about creating an environment where you can have an insulated room or semi-insulated room that you can get down to that temperature range, which we discussed earlier, and you want airflow in there. I've seen people do it with coolers, with air conditioners, with fans, with a combination of a bunch of things. But ultimately, you know, I mean, I've seen people store deer in older refrigerators and things like that that have a good airflow system. I think you can do it any of those methods as long as you've got the cool temperature and the airflow. And a good way to determine like how your meat is doing in that environment is by feeling it. If it's tacky and still kind of moist, then it's not getting enough airflow, and that's creating an environment for bacteria on the meat because that drying out and the formation of the pellicle too helps create or eliminate the environment to where bacteria can grow as quickly as it could in a moist environment. So, and then two, that pellicle as it forms lets you know like, all right, you know, I let this deer hang overnight inside my cooler or outside or whatever. I've got the pellicle now. It's formed. I can see it. Now I'm ready to start doing some work on it because it's a good indicator that the meat's firmed up enough to start working with more easily. Any comments on walk-in coolers?
I it's pretty easy these days to spend less on a good storage system than it is a good ice chest style cooler. Chest freezers are pretty readily available and pretty cheap, and upright freezers that you could take the shelves out of, and there are devices that you can use to override the power. So basically you can set the temperature digitally above freezing and it will cycle the power on that unit off and on as needed. So you can keep a freezer at 34 to 36 degrees. So for the cost of a chest freezer and a $70 Inkbird or Johnson control unit, you could have yourself not a walk-in, but a reach-in, drop-in cooler.
Yep. One, too, if you got some money to burn, there's all these new dry age coolers that are coming out as well. That pretty pricey, but
way pricey.
They'll get the job done.
Yeah, way pricey.
Yeah,
yeah. There's some good. I gotta see, what is it, 10x20 walk in? That's run off an air conditioning unit and a cool bot, and it keeps my room at 36 degrees in Florida in July. It works great. It'll cool quite a large animal pretty quick. So that's what you need. You need small enough pieces to cool down quick enough on the bone and stay dry.
Also, too, one thing I was going to mention is, like, I hunt on the road a lot, and sometimes, you may shoot an animal day one, and you're there with your buddy who's still got 4 days to fill his tag. You can often rent space at processors or butchers or whatever inside their locker for, like, a per-day fee if you're not going to have your animal processed there. And there's even places, like, when we're up in Wyoming hunting antelope, sometimes if, that situation occurs, I'll take it in and I'll pay them to skin it and hang it. And just let it hang in their cooler for 3-4 days until I'm ready to pack up and go, and then I'll ask them, pull it back out. I may break it down in half or break it down into quarters and then put it in the cooler using my frozen milk jug method and then transport it home. And I think that's a perfectly good option too. So keep that in mind if you're out and about. And then I did have a note on here, Adam, as we're like going through this too. Can you, and I mentioned it earlier and we didn't go really into it. Could you explain the difference in dry age versus wet aging?
So wet aging is typically when you're going to get in a packaged grocery store piece of meat. You know, it's going to be cryovac'd, anaerobic environment. It's going to sit there in liquid and in its own juice for a while. And dry aging is exactly what it sounds like. It's exposed to air. You're going to have a proper humidity so you don't have that pellicle form too quickly. And just like the temperature has to have the ability to leave the inside in a controlled manner, the humidity has to have the ability to leave the inside in a controlled manner. And if the outside dries too quickly, you'll get what's called case hardening, and that moisture will stay on the inside. So dry aging really requires a lot more attention to detail, whereas wet aging, you can get any vacuum sealer. You're going to provide that anaerobic environment. You're going to provide moisture, and then it'll be able to sit indefinitely until you open it back up, and then it gets probably deteriorates pretty rapidly, you know, depending on what was in there before you put it in that anaerobic environment. So,
but sort of something to round it all out with is that soaking in ice water in a cooler is not the same thing as wet aging.
No, absolutely not. Not even in the least. No, apples and oranges, night and day, however you want to do it. Dry aging and wet aging are closer together than wet aging and throwing meat in ice water.
Got it. Nope, that's perfect. The other thing I had, if I was a person that was interested in dry aging my, let's say venison ham, venison back quarter, what would be the ideal amount of time, in your opinion and experience, that I would probably want to dry age that?
I mean, it's going to depend on thickness, humidity. Again, you want to start out with a high humidity, low temperature, and the proper amount of salt and cure, depending on what your final outcome is going to be, and that's a whole other podcast. So time for something cured, I would say...
No, not cured, dry age.
Dry age, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Man, it really doesn't start till about 2 weeks. I've done venison on the carcass for 90 days, and it's been some of the best steaks people have ever had. So really, just the right environment and what your preference is. But I really think like 3 to 4 weeks for me is right where you're not getting so much loss. You're starting to get that really good flavor change, and it's not so much that people are like, wow, that's way different than I'm used to. So that's kind of the sweet spot for a lot of people as far as dry aging goes, in my opinion. 3 to 4 weeks.
Nice.
Depending on the
cut. No, it's perfect.
Some cuts don't require it, but still can benefit from it. Because, again, it's just a different texture, a different flavor. And if you eat a lot of wild game, it's just something else to add to the, you know, varieties, the spice of life, right?
Mm-hmm. And what do you do? So we talked about, we've mentioned the pellicle several times. What do you do with that in the butchering process? Where does that go?
That'll go right into the grind. That'll get your dry age burger flavor and profile. Add fat with that, and you will not be disappointed.
I like it. It's tasty. I've had it before. Really, really, really good. So, well, I think we hit on just about everything I wanted to in this episode. I wanted us to talk through sort of the reason why we did it, you know, the sort of myths behind it, and then to talk sort of why we believe it's wrong, and that's a lot of backed by science and reason and other smart people outside of us. But and then I wanted to provide those alternative methods so that people kind of have a good idea of like what to do if you're looking to get off the train of soaking your meat in ice water. I can't think of another way to say that. But that, you know, it what?
Not.
If you're looking for alternative ways, I think that's it. Or if you're looking for, you know, some of the better ways, that's what we recommend. But I don't know, Adam. You got any last thoughts or alibis or anything you want to leave the audience with before we go?
But before we started, you were having, I think you threw out the phrase low quality individual or something.
What? No.
I don't know. Something made me think of it. There is a podcast I still listen to called Cooking Issues. And they would always talk about low-quality individuals. Like, when you do something that isn't the best way you could do it, it's just a low-quality individual, you know? It's like, keep it high quality.
Nice. I like it. That's a hot tip. For me, you know, I think there's all things steeped in tradition, a lot of it when it comes to wild game. Like, we've learned from our forefathers ways to do things. They're not always right. They're not always wrong. But I would say if you want to, you know, increase the output, if you want to change things up a bit and, you know, think about things from a food perspective when you're out hunting and get more in tune with it, you know, look to the science, look to the health and safety standards, look to the way that a butcher or a processor or somebody else handles it. And, you know, I think in the end, you'll end up with a product you'll probably enjoy more. I'm not going to tell you you're doing it wrong, but there's definitely other ways to do it that's going to make the game and the meat more enjoyable, if that makes sense. It does in my mind.
The animal already died. Don't
like Adam said. Again. Yep. Don't kill it twice. With that, thanks everybody for listening. We'll make sure we have all the show notes available online. Be sure to head over to social media and make sure you're following Harvest Nature. And Adam, too, what's your Instagram handle? Cure number one?
Yeah, cure number one.
That's it. If you want to hit up Adam with any butchering questions, he's a wealth of knowledge. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button and leave us a review. Tell us we're doing right, or, you know, tell us we're doing wrong. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.